Welcome to The Common Sense Show with your host, Dave Hodges. We discuss a variety of topics here, including the deep state, the new world order, Agenda 21. There is no one, no topic beyond Dave's reach, because as you know, you can't dodge the Hodge.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us in the interview segment of the Common Sense Show. As you know, we are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. And this is Dave Hodges. I'm your host, your embattled host. Boy, I tell you, I come out on one side of, yeah, we should lock down and go along with the government says. And now I'm starting to see the ridiculousness of it. And especially when you compare Brazil and Sweden and they're open for business and their death rates are exactly the same as ours. And now I flip to the other side and, oh, incoming from everywhere. Hey, be gentle, okay? I'm just trying to help. Anyway, we really appreciate all of you being here, tongue-in-cheek comment aside. And we have some people that keep the lights on here for us. And we want to tell you who they are before we get started. And let me just say this right off the top. I am of a firm belief that cash is trash and it's going to crash. And you have to have some operating cash in your accounts. But if you're loading everything in there that you make, you're going to regret the day that you didn't make a move. You need to diversify. I use Noble Gold. I mean, I went to them personally, and I've been advertising for them for 3 years. And I said, hey, guys, help me out here. What do I need to do? And they found some really big deficits in my work. And they said, Dave, this is what we recommend. And now I'm all fixed, and I'm really happy about it. These guys are tremendous. And you can get a hold of them at 877-646-5347, 877-646-5347. Tell them I said hello and tell them I said to call. They'll give you the royal treatment. Also, too, we have delays in our food shipments. But if you think this crisis is going to be over by May, well, okay, that's fine. Take that chance. But if you're someone that says, I don't even have 6 months of food, and the experts are recommending 2 years plus seeds, well, if you want to work towards the ideal, okay, then you need to use MPS. MPS is the best there is. Why? Because they didn't sell out to the government when they could have. They could have sold everything lock, stock, and barrel. They had a sale on in January. We were running for the 4 week and 2 week supplies, and that sale is still on today. Talk about integrity. They're the best. And restaurant quality food, it's the best. This is a great company to work with. I've walked away from other food companies as their representative before because I had issues with them. This company, I have no integrity issues whatsoever. So how do you get a hold of them? Go to preparewithdave.com. They'll have a full disclosure on there because it's varying from day to day about when you'll get your food from when you order it. So go to preparewithdave.com. And if you have food, you need water. And this is something you can get right away. In the fifth day of a crisis, the Naval War College says the biggest cause of death is what? Waterborne illnesses. And you probably won't have trouble finding water, standing water, pool water, pond water, whatever it would be, but you don't dare drink it unless you put it through the AquaPure Pro water filter. It's the best in the business. If you go to waterwithdave.com, you're going to see not testimonials, but research that shows you why this is the best in the industry. Now listen to this. It's the best. And they're offering their product at 40% off. That's built into the price you'll see on the screen when you go to waterwithdave.com. And I tell you, this will save lives. I'm absolutely convinced of it. We're going to really push this hard if President Trump keeps us locked down for much longer, because we're going to have food shortages. We're going to have food riots. The Fed, the people in DHS tell me they're already preparing for this. Well, water is going to come too, because at some point people are going to walk off their jobs at the water treatment plants, and then you're on your own. That's why you want to do this. This isn't a scare tactic. This is a called get ready tactic. Waterwithdave.com. Okay, those are the three groups that keep us on the air right here for this broadcast. Now, we've got a special broadcast for you. We've got someone who I know who's an attorney, Dan Dufresne. And Dan knows the Constitution, as attorneys do. And I've reached out to him because I said, I think there's some things going on here that are highly unconstitutional with regard to the lockdown of our country in the midst of the COVID-19 crisis. and there's no end in sight. And I'm on the record already saying we need to go to the restrictions that Brazil is putting on their people. That makes the most sense. I'm not going to go into details now, but we need a change because we are sacrificing our liberty for security. And you know what Ben Franklin said about that? And also, too, folks, we're putting our economy into a position where it may never recover. We've got to make some moves. And I think the best way for us to get our way is to attack this issue through constitutional issues. So, Dan, welcome to the show. I'm really glad you could join us. I know your practice is in California, but you represent people all over the country, don't you?
Yeah, that's right, Dave. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, my specialty is mostly EEOC investigations and federal employment law, but as you mentioned, I have some background with constitutional law, and like you, I remember when our constitution, used to allow for the freedom of association, assemble, and worship.
Yeah, well, I haven't been to church for a few weeks, and here we're coming up on Easter, and I have a major problem with that.
Yeah, I really do think it is a problem, Dave. One of the things that's interesting is that if there is, the court has ruled that if there is a so-called civil emergency, that there is a right to issue a stay-at-home order. But the interesting thing is that usually is a federal issue. And here we're dealing with state issues where it's a state-by-state governor saying stay at home or they are using law enforcement, Dave. I'm sure you've heard about the infamous case in Malibu where a paddleboarder was, chased down by three policemen.
I put it on my website.
He's out in the middle of nowhere and he's issued a ticket. So the question is, I think it's kind of twofold, the right to assemble and again, worship. And I think the question is whether or not this, so-called pandemic is enough of a compelling government reason. That's kind of the standard, that if it's a strict scrutiny test and the government has a right, if it's a so-called pandemic or an emergency, but I'm just not sure the numbers at this point, show that, Dave.
Well, and there's evidence that the numbers are being fudged. I'm hearing from doctors and nurses from around the country, and they're being told, and I'm going to sum it up this way. This isn't necessarily a verbatim quote given to one person, but kind of a summary of what I'm being told. And what they're being told is, if it's not a gunshot or a car accident, they died of COVID.
I've heard the same thing, even to the extent that they've changed the insurance coding.
Exactly.
To specifically have it for that. So that raises the constitutional issue. Is this enough to justify, really, the first time in my lifetime, a radical notion that the governor of a state can order people to stay home. For me, one of the most interesting things, I'm Orthodox Catholic, and I just don't, the churches have just folded to the state, which to me, from a constitutional standpoint, is pretty scary, especially with Easter coming up. And it's as if we've kind of really, this panic has caused us, like you said with Ben Franklin, we've tucked away our common sense. It's a perfect name for your show at this point in time because, the Constitution, a lot of it is based on common sense and a freedom to associate and a freedom to assemble. And at this point in time, I am worried, Dave, that it's been one step too far. Because I think about if this is a level of a pandemic, and it could be. I mean, I think the jury's still out on that. But what if something really traumatic happens? Are we just now programmed as a society just to run inside and stay home because our governor tells us?
Well, that's right. It gives them unyielding authority to come out and limit any activity they see fit. And there's no consistency. In California, I believe they were going to close the gun stores. I know in LA County they reversed that, and I know the inside story behind that. But in other parts of the country, they can't open gun stores, and in some parts of the country they can. Well, that's a Second Amendment issue. And if you're worried about resource raiding from neighbors that aren't prepared, you're denying people the right to protect themselves. That's one issue.
That's right. Yeah, that's a big one, yeah. And it goes back to the the overarching concept of our Constitution, which is federalism, right? You know, the 10th Amendment is there for a reason. And it's right now it's in jeopardy. Not only the Second Amendment, the First Amendment, the Fourth Amendment. And at this point in time, I was really shocked also by the fact that our governor in California, and I know New York, he just issued a, you know, Governor Newsom issued an executive order saying that people won't have to pay rent until July 31st. So I'm sitting there thinking, well, what is his so-called constitutional authority to render a contract invalid? It's just the number of issues that are constitutional, contractual, and then also we've talked about this too, Dave, with our criminal justice system. You know, the courts, you can imagine, they're all shut, you know, shut down for this pandemic. And what's happening is that essential hearings, such as bail hearings, are trying to be processed, you know, telephonically. But the problem with that is a lot of defense counsel, they don't have an opportunity to talk with their client in private. So that takes away the attorney-client privilege, which is very important. And then also, you know, so-called non-essential hearings like trials and plea deals. There's been cases where, you know, an individual has a plea deal set up the day before this coronavirus happened. That takes months to arrange. Boom, he's got to sit in jail now indefinitely until he can arrange for another hearing date. So, you know, there's a lot of moving parts here, from civil to constitutional to, as you said, Second Amendment rights.
Isn't that sitting there indefinitely for bail hearings, isn't that cruel and unusual punishment?
You know, that's actually been asserted. Yeah, that's exactly right. That's something that's often asserted as, you know, cruel and unusual punishment. And right now, some of the bail hearings, what they're arguing is that, hey, this is an elderly client who maybe had a money laundering, you know, and let's remember, it's just an arrest, right? I mean, we have a presumption of innocence in this country, but, you know, notwithstanding that, at bail hearings, the defense attorneys are actually arguing, hey, I don't want this elderly client to go back into the jail holding cell because guess what? There's coronavirus. So it's kind of like everything's been turned upside down, right? He's making an argument that, hey, my client should not have to go back into jail because right now, you know, somebody just tested positive. And if you've ever been in a, you know, a jail or prison or any kind of a facility like that, I mean, it is going to spread like wildfire.
It already has. Exactly. They're going to keep the jails open. They may as well keep the restaurants open. I mean, or the gyms open. You got the same level of exposure and sometimes even closer contact. But with regard to this whole issue, it doesn't make sense to me that the government's, and California is the worst at this, they're releasing some really dangerous people. I mean, I've got reports on pedophiles and so forth. So they're releasing these people. So someone who's arrested that hasn't even been convicted, unlike the people they're releasing, they're holding indefinitely. How does that make any sense? How is it even legal?
Yeah, that's right, Dave, because a lot of times I think there's a misconception that, unfortunately, with our bail system, if someone who's accused of a crime cannot afford bail, well, guess what? They just stay in jail, and that they stay there until their hearing date. And oftentimes, even if it's a misdemeanor or a DUI or something along those lines, marijuana use, whatever it might be, they are stuck in jail until that hearing date. And what you're referring to is that somebody who was arrested during the coronavirus pandemic, what they're doing right now is that they have a right to a bail hearing, and some of these judges are literally doing it, 100 at a time, just saying if it's a misdemeanor, we're not even going to have a bail hearing. We're just going to let them all out on their own recognizance. And as you said, the poor other individual who's sitting right now in jail, whose plea deal was delayed because it's quote non-essential. And I've gotten call after call from desperate mothers, desperate fathers, you know, boyfriends, girlfriends saying, you know, my boyfriend was so close to getting his life back together. He was arranged to go to a halfway house. He had a plea deal. What do I do? And my answer to them, Dave, is there's nothing you can do. Attorneys have filed motions. They've tried everything, but non-essential hearings in most courthouses are not being heard right now, which is a delaying trial juries as well.
I can see the day when this crisis abates, when there are hearings and lawsuits up the yin-yang, but I think the government's probably going to handle it like they did Agent Orange. Hear no evil, see no evil, and just dismiss it.
Yeah, I mean, the no pun intended, but the jury is still out on that, because I do think there will be some you know, litigation related to, like you said, cruel and unusual punishment. And it kind of is, you know, this is kind of indicative of an example of how broken our bail system and really our criminal justice system is, because you hit the nail right on the head that, you know, somebody's accused, he's sitting there for 9 months waiting for his plea deal to come through, and then he's got to wait another, you know, potentially 9 months because of the so-called pandemic. It's just, and again, I'm in the position where I get a phone call and I just have to tell the client, I really wish there's some motion. I really wish I could go down and, you know, pound on the desk and order a hearing, but it is not happening. And there is no, you know, avenue right now because he can't afford bail. He has to stay in jail. I mean, it's just, it really is mind-boggling, Dave, when you think about how at this point in time, again, I understand this is serious and my goodness, with the ventilators and everything else, but we have to be very careful to protect our constitutional rights, you know,
no,
especially
totally,
a speedy jury trial.
I couldn't agree with you more. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Dan Dufresne. He's an attorney in California, but he represents clients all over the country, and he'd like to make his services available to you. And let me tell you why this is a good time to write down this number. It's a good time to write down Dan's number, and I'll give it to you here, 858-740-8181. Stay tuned, I'll get it to you again. But the reason why is because as we deal with employment issues, you know, in this topsy-turvy economy that's going to make no sense, we're broker than anything could ever be, and people are going to go back to work, and the bosses are going to forget about things like Title IX and age discrimination and ADA regulations. They're going to forget about all that stuff, and they're going to trample on workers' rights. You're lucky to have a job. And I'm predicting right now we're going to see a return in part to treatment of employees like the sweatshop days in the early days of immigration in the 1880s. We're going to have that kind of mindset from bosses. So you're going to want to write down Dan's number, because if you're someone who's being treated unfairly, you're going to want to deal with this at some point. And he can get you before the EEOC, and they do all your work. Yeah, or he could get you before the Office of Civil Rights, and they do all your work. And you don't get locked up into litigation that could cost you $100,000. You can save a lot of money. So Dan's number, take a note of this, 858-740-8181. And on these kind of claims, he can represent you no matter where you're at in the country. That's 858-740-8181. Well, Dan, I'm really glad you're joining us here, because these are really critical issues. I want to go to another issue now, that we are seeing roadblocks with a presumption of guilt being set up on highways between states. Do you know about that?
Yes, I do. That was actually brought up at today's press conference. It was a specific issue because the governor of Texas has roadblocks in place to stop citizens from Louisiana from entering Texas. We are in uncharted waters here, Dave. I wish I could say off the top of my head whether or not that, you know, there's something that constitutionally allows that restriction. In, you know, let's remember, this is a state by state issue. So we've got one governor stopping anyone with Louisiana plates. This is happening today. Anyone with Louisiana plates, the governor of Texas has said, it's within your authority, officers, with no reasonable suspicion of any crime, no probable cause, you can stop based on just the license plate of Louisiana. Now, you get into issues where if you make that initial stop, and God forbid there's drugs in the car, or there's another issue, that initial stop never should have happened because there's no reasonable suspicion. So it's not just in Texas, it's in other states as well. I understand that Georgia is also, you know, thinking about doing this, where they're just going to stop that freedom of travel, which is clearly allowed in our Constitution for 200 years. It's been there, the right to travel. So it's uncharted waters, and I think there's going to be litigation on that as well. You know, it's, and I think citizens are really hopefully getting concerned about this, where you're trying to cross a state border and you run into, you know, an officer who's locked and loaded and is truly the roadblock, like you said, Dave. I mean, they are not letting, you know, people from Louisiana travel to Texas.
Well, it's not just there. They have them.
Yeah.
They have them in Rhode Island and Vermont. And in some cases, it's the National Guard pulling people over for having a New York license plate. And to me, that's guilt before innocence. That's a presumption of guilt that's not valid.
Well, there is no, I mean, when you stop somebody, you have to have what's called reasonable suspicion to stop them. And, you know, the officer has to have that by observing the car. And if he has some reasonable suspicion that criminal activity is afoot, or, you know, something is happening within the vehicle, or obviously a DUI, yes, he has authority based on his observations to pull that car over. But the court has ruled over and over that the officer has to observe the reasonable suspicion to make the stop, not even the arrest, just the initial stop. To your point, Dave, having a license plate does not make it reasonable suspicion to stop somebody and take their temperature.
Exactly.
You know, I don't know how. I'm a little surprised that there hasn't been more pushback by the federal criminal defense bar. I don't know why they're silent on this, or even, you know, the ACLU. You know, they're usually pretty aggressive about litigation. In this case, they're just it's just crickets. I'm very surprised at that. I would think they would file an immediate motion, you know, or an injunction in Texas to at least find out whether or not this is, you know, constitutional to stop this, you know, really this unlawful harassment, in my opinion.
Well, I think it's a matter of timing, and maybe I'm wrong, but this is how I perceive it. I'm thinking that right now the public was so on board on shelter in place, overwhelmingly, with some exceptions and with minor violations, but the public basically agrees with this, even though it's causing catastrophic harm to our economy. And I think that groups like the ACLU are afraid of becoming very unpopular, anti-American. They don't care about safety. All they care about is lawsuits and attention. And I think that's the mindset they might be working from. But I will tell you this. If my comments that I get from my listeners and my viewers on my website are any indication, people are now, the pendulum swinging back in the other direction. People have had enough. They're seeing Brazil and Sweden with very few restrictions, and their death curve is the same as ours. And they're seeing this stuff, and they're also finding out about Fauci. This guy is a piece of work. He works for the CDC. He wrote love letters to Hillary, literally love letters that Glenn Beck exposed in the election of 2016. He's a never-Trumper. They all had their crying parties when he got elected in the CDC. And he has a business relationship along with Dr. Birx, with Bill Gates, which is a conflict of interest. And people are finding this out now. And I got to tell you, the pendulum's coming back, Dan. I think you're going to see the beginning of these lawsuits right now. I think that people are saying enough is enough.
Yeah, and I think, to your point, one of the main things that is going to drive those lawsuits is being stopped by the National Guard. I mean, like I said, we're in uncharted waters here where just because of your license plate, you're stopped. I mean, yeah, this is a very serious issue. And I think that, to your point, the panic has set in so much that, yes, people are, okay, let's shelter in place. I heard somebody died in New York, you know, right away on the subway. I don't want that to happen to me, so let's shelter in place. We'll accept that. But then, like you said, I think the American spirit, which is still alive, you know, especially in Texas and Louisiana, those parts of the country, eventually, I absolutely agree that the pendulum is going to swing. And I hope, Dave, that the pendulum swings by civil litigation and not through, you know, violence or, you know, unrest. That's that's one reason why it's so important to follow constitutional issues, is because that's kind of a safeguard to civil unrest. You know, if you take it through the courts, you know, that's the avenue to do it. That's the avenue we've always used. And I just hope that that's, you know, the steps that Americans take, as opposed to some kind of internal unrest.
Well, yeah, the unrest could be triggered by other things too, like not having food in your pantry. That could be a pretty powerful motive to get out into the streets and start looking. There's a case I wanted to tell you about, and I'm going to describe a 20-minute video that I watched. It was a man in a hospital bed, and he fit the stereotype, all tatted up. You know, of course, he's a rebel. That's how it looks, okay, because of his appearance. But actually, if you take out his colorful language, he actually articulated some things really well, and I ended up siding with him. He's in a hospital room, and he's got the mask on, and he's a man I wouldn't want to take on if I was a policeman. And these policemen are in their gowns in his room, and initially they're 8-10 feet away from him, and they're saying, "You're going to take this corona test." And they were, you know, I think it's probably the pinprick would be my guess, although I didn't see that part. But it involved an injection, because that was real clear in their conversation. And he says, "Oh, no, no, that's not the way it works here. You're not doing this to me, blankety blankers." And he says, "I want a lawyer." And I thought, uh-oh, this guy knows what he's doing. Because then a couple minutes later, he said, "Am I under arrest?" And they said, "No, you're not under arrest, but we're doing this test." And I'm thinking, wait a minute. They just say he's not under arrest. They refused his right to an attorney. They overpower him to do what they're going to do after he asked them if he's under arrest, and they said no. Dan, break that down for us legally.
Yeah, Dave, I actually saw that exact video, and the first part of it is that, you know, the officials in the hospital, whether they were nurses or doctors, they have no state action or no authority to arrest him or to take any kind of action against him, you know, by touching him or doing anything along those lines. So when I saw that video, I thought to myself, absolutely, this gentleman is well-versed in the law. He knows his rights. But even by saying that, Dave, you saw it as well, they pretty much attacked him. That is, if I were in his position, that warrants filing a police report for assault. They had absolutely no right to treat that man as they did. And then you get to the civil side of the house, right, where there's a litany, a legion of potential civil actions as well. But I did see that exact video, and I encourage your viewers, if it's up on your website, to take a look, because this is just, based on what I saw, there was no law enforcement there. It was just
hospital officials. There were cops there. Some of those cops
were gowns.
You could barely see their insignias that were sticking up above the gowns they had on. And I went back and you know, I can see how anyone could miss that, because I didn't see it on first glance either. And I thought, well, who the heck are these guys? And so I went back, Dan, and I freeze framed it, and I blew it up a little bit, and I said, these are pretty clearly police.
Wow, you know what, Dave? That actually makes it more disconcerting, because
he asked him, am I under arrest?
Yeah, he said, I'm not under arrest. He was not, and that is, you know, code for you're free to leave. A lot of people don't understand that. Unless you're being detained for your safety or the officer's safety, if you're not under arrest, you are free to leave. That's why he asked that. I'm shocked that the police were there and that they, you know, didn't take action to stop this from happening, because if he wasn't under arrest, he committed no crime. So this was truly a bum rush. I was just shocked that that happened. I mean, and as you said, he was a pretty big dude, pretty well built, but it took about six of them, I think, to, you know, hold him down. And I don't know if it was, like you said, a test that was administered or whatever it was, but it was certainly against his will. And for the officers to be there and to allow that, that's amazing.
Well, I'm not a lawyer, but I remember something like, I had a relative that went against medical advice one time. They called it AMA, against medical advice. They discharge you and then refuse to treat you. To me, I think the hospital could have done that, but I don't see how they can impose treatment. They had, remember they had the nurse there and she was saying, you're going to do this. And then the guys who were the cops, they were the cops. And then they, no, you're not under arrest. Well, then if you're not under arrest, you're good to go, aren't you?
Absolutely. And unless there's something we're missing that the video doesn't show, that maybe something else was afoot, like he was being detained for his own safety. But even in that case, it's very limited what the police can do. They can usually just pat you down and, you know, they can't go any further than that unless you give consent. So to your point, yeah, there's a concept called, you know, informed consent, where the patient has to know what's going on. We all sign this when we go to an emergency room. We don't even look at it. You know, it's very common. And we just sign off and say, okay, I give implied consent. If something happens, the doctor can help me. In this case, obviously, he did not give that implied consent. And I just think it was clearly a civil or criminal assault. And I did hear the nurse kind of going after him and almost gleefully willing to, you know, I mean, it was disturbing. I thought for a second if it wasn't real, but I mean, it certainly is, right? It's real, and that makes it all the more disturbing.
Well, I had somebody write to me, and so I have to ask you about this, but I think I know the answer. When you are arrested in some states, they have the right to draw blood on you if they want to, but you sign that right away when you get a driver's license. Am I right on that?
Oh, that's really state by state, Dave. You can, whether or not, you know, you can have blood drawn or if you don't want it drawn. Yeah, that's really state by state. That comes into play with DUIs. If somebody, you know, says, hey, I don't want to have my blood drawn. I want to go to the police station and do a breathalyzer. It depends on whether or not they have to actually get a warrant or if you waive that right when you get your driver's license. So, yeah, there are some states where you have to actually get a warrant to do that. In other states, you waive it with your driver's license. But in this case, he was not there, from my understanding, he was not there, you know, based on an arrest. He wasn't there for a DUI test or possibly marijuana intoxication, and he was driving. From my understanding is that this gentleman was there just to kind of get himself checked out for coronavirus, and it went south on him really quick.
Yeah, I put out an all call here, and I haven't heard anything, and I was hoping I would, because I published on my website, I think it was on Twitter, if I remember right, and I published that, and I said, I would like to know who this individual is, and if he'd like to come on my show, we'll do a GoFundMe so he can raise the funds to sue everyone that was in that room, including the agencies they represent. And
I know a good lawyer for that, Dave.
Yeah, but I haven't heard anything back again. I'm actually planning on running that story again up on the website. I'm going to duplicate it because I feel so strongly about it. Because it's a microcosm of what could happen to all of us under this lockdown.
Yeah, and I think that what's more surprising to me is, you know, we live in this age of social media where you can publish anything in an instant, and I just find it really amazing that going back to the roadblocks or even this gentleman or just the lockdown orders in general, that the American public is just so willing to accept this, you know. And I think it's great if we can so-called flatten the curve, absolutely, but there has to be some balance where, you know, here in San Diego County, I think there were six people that received a ticket for $600 for, you know, quote unquote, grouping. And, you know, the police are on the hunt looking for anybody that's in a group of, I think it's three or more here in San Diego. You clearly have a right to associate. And to me, the most interesting, you know, constitutional argument would be the freedom to worship, right? You know, can the state come in and say there's a pandemic, and Dave, you're not going to church on Easter Sunday. The end. You know, who wins that argument? Is it the state that they have that much, you know, authority to do that, or does the freedom to worship trump? You know, and those are just fascinating, you know, legal arguments, and people are, you know, this is ironically enough the holiest time of the year for, you know, Judaism and Christianity. And I mean, it's So this is a, you know, it's a prime time where people are going to, you know, mass or services on Easter, and the state is saying, no, you're not. We will arrest you. If you walk in those doors and you try to assemble and worship the God of your choosing, no, you will be arrested. That's scary times, Dave.
Yeah, I'm not sure I want to be taken on the Lord on this either, because it says wherever two or more are gathered in my name. And God, don't strike me down, because I'm supporting the fact that people need to be worshiping.
That's right. There's no parentheses in there either that is a carve-out for a pandemic.
No, no. God did not make the pandemic exception. That's true.
That's right.
No pandemic waiver here for your local church. And, yeah, we're getting creative around here about how we're gonna, you know, celebrate Easter. It's the most important holiday in my religion, and I'm, as they said in the old show network, I'm madder than hell, and I'm not gonna take it anymore. I mean, I'm calling now for reasonable restrictions, and you can do social distancing, multiple services, you can do all kinds of things, but they're not even attempting. In fact, listen how bad it gets. I had a lady write to me today. I think it was in Ohio. I'll have to go back and check. But she said they put out a PSA on their media, public service announcement, and they said, coming up on Easter, we're going to be driving around neighborhoods with police presence, and if we see lots of cars gathered in a home, we have the right to come into that home and arrest anyone who is there in greater numbers than the family numbers permit.
Wow. And they said, actually, if you're in your own residence,
Let's say I have five of my, we have in my church, we have these family groups. You can get together, you know, usually biweekly, and you worship together one night of the week, and you have dinner and so forth. So if you do something like that for Easter, they said they're going to come to get you.
Well, and to your point about social distancing, you know, there's several mega churches, you know, here in San Diego and Minneapolis and, you know, all over the country that they seat hundreds. There's absolutely no reason that the state, again, let's remember, this is state authority. This is state authority saying that you're under threat of arrest. There's no reason that they can't accommodate reasonable, you know, separation, as you mentioned, and have, if they want to, eight masses a day or eight services a day. And I really wish that someone, you know, if anyone's listening to this before Easter, if they have the gumption or the will to do that, because you could comply with the law. If the stay-at-home order says you can't group in more than whatever, fine, then have it set up where everybody walks in a single line and they have separation in the pews and they enjoy their constitutional right to worship on Easter. And also, Dave, this goes obviously for, you know, the Jewish community with Passover.
Exactly.
And as I mentioned, this is, you know, we Catholics, we call them submarine Catholics. They only go to Mass on Easter and Christmas, right? They surface for those 2 days. And it's the same in Judaism, you know, where a lot of Jewish Americans don't regularly attend service. But I tell you what, they are during this week. I mean, it's the attendance goes through the roof, right? This is the holiest of holy time for them, and the same with Christianity. So I just can't believe that we're going to sit back and say, well, the state is the authority. Again, you could do easily social distancing and allow people that constitutional right to worship, which is really, you know, sacred. It's such a part of our history.
You know, I'm probably going to write an editorial the day before Easter. I'll just say congratulations. The governments are doing the work of Satan, and I'll go down that road. I wanted to get into your expertise, job issues now, okay? Because you do a lot of work before the EEOC and OCR and so forth with job issues, with discrimination and so forth. The way things are being done now, are there any 14th Amendment violations or any other constitutional violations that you're seeing that could be addressed in the form of a lawsuit?
Yeah, it's not necessarily constitutional issues, Dave. It's more, discrimination and retaliation. And it's funny you should say that, because as you mentioned, I have a national practice on BARDA, Minnesota, and D.C., but the EEOC can handle, you know, cases nationwide as I do. And, you know, just last night I got a couple phone calls, and what do you know, the 59-year-old female was furloughed, but the younger employee in her mid-30s, she just took on the 59-year-old employee's responsibilities. That's not necessarily a violation of law, but it certainly raises issues, right? And then you get one phone call, and then you get three phone calls later, and it's always the, you know, it's often the oldest employee at the entity, or sometimes, unfortunately, can be, you know, a race issue as well, or a gender issue. So I think a lot of employers are so, at this point in time, they may not even obviously be doing it intentionally, but they're so quick to want to lay off and furlough employees to, you know, save something for the bottom line, that oftentimes they don't look at the overall picture. And, you know, I do that as well. I consult with employers where if they are, you know, in the midst of a layoff or a furlough, how do you do that to make sure that you're not, you know, running afoul with federal discrimination law?
That's a really good answer, because so I guess if I'm going to take meaning from this and apply it in a way the layman can understand, if you're working in a corporation and disproportionately people of relatively equal contributions to the company, if a certain race were to be laid off or a certain age group were to be laid off with a much higher frequency, say a protected class is laid off at a higher rate, for example, is that actionable under these severe guidelines we're under with essential businesses, non-essential businesses, essential, you know, positions in a company? In other words, is this fertile ground for coming lawsuits?
It is, and you hit the nail right on the head where, you know, I think it was 7 million unemployment claims were just filed, I think, last week or some, you know, the highest in history. It's just absolutely flooded. And a lot of times I'll talk with employers and they'll inadvertently make a mistake that, and because the law is set up where, you know, they have to make sure that they don't discriminate based on obviously age, gender, the protected classes, as you mentioned. But they're in such a rush to, you know, get the layoffs out the door that, it is fertile ground for, I think, plaintiff's attorneys who are looking for actionable, you know, employment claims, because right now you've got 7 million people, applying for unemployment. I tell you what, a good percentage of those are just hopefully going to, you know, pick up a phone and call a lawyer and find out, hey, was this done correctly? So it's going to be interesting, Dave, to see where it all plays out, because, you know, there's a difference between furloughing an employee and laying off an employee. You know, there's a difference between termination for cause and whether that employee can get unemployment. I mean, there's all these nuanced issues that impact the smallest company, you know, size. Yes, it does matter for some issues, obviously, but, you know, you can be a small entity, a small, you know, tech company with 10 employees, and you lay off 8, and next thing you know, you find yourself in a lawsuit if you don't consult with counsel.
So let me ask you a question. Let's say I have a small business and I employ 10 people, and I'm considered to be a non-essential business. We can work from our homes, but, you know, our clientele is severely limited and cut back. So I don't really need any employees now. I can do all the work that's left over by myself. What would you advise me to do? Or if I were to keep 2 employees, let's do that. I get rid of 8 and I keep 2. What would you advise me as an owner?
Yeah, I mean, with that, it's always, you know, tough with hypotheticals, obviously, but I generally follow, you know, first in, first out is a pretty good way to do it that shows, you know, equity with regard to a layoff or a furlough. So if, you know, if an employee's been there for 10 years, you keep that employee versus the employee who's been there for 6 years, you know. So I think that's, generally speaking, the best approach. The other, obviously, wonderful approach is that if an employee's at will, you know, the employer has a lot of discretion, but as long as they don't discriminate against that employee, which a lot of counsel forget about, but if that's the case, you know, you can look at performance, obviously, and one way you do that is through performance reviews. And that's why it's very important to make sure that if you're an employer and you're doing performance reviews, those are accurate and you get the right copy and you get the right version, because those can be used as, you know, defense down the road to say, hey, listen, we gave him an employee review, you know, 6 years ago, and ever since then he hasn't been, you know, up to snuff. So it's important to go back through that employee file and really take your time if you're an employer to make sure that you're, you know, taking the right steps.
Yeah, so you do take clients nationwide, right?
Yeah, that's right. With the EEOC, it's a federal entity that investigates several discrimination statutes, from, you know, disability to retaliation to gender, Equal Pay Act. So yeah, it's a federal agency, and really the key there, if you're hiring counsel, is as you said, it's an interesting setup, because you know the employee wants to make sure that they approach the EEOC in the right manner and has, you know, specific citations to laws that are violated. A lot of times employees, rightfully so, you know, they're just mad and they feel wrong, so they just go and file an EEOC complaint. And, you know, the vast majority of those are just thrown out. So it's always best to consult with counsel beforehand to make sure that you're getting the right documents and you're making the right arguments, you know, to this huge federal agency that is going to be swamped with claims. I can just only imagine from, you know, the day that the shutdown happened of our country. I mean, it's going to be just, I've actually heard through other attorneys that their system, similar to unemployment, has pretty much, shut down. It's been overwhelmed. So yeah, the key is that before you approach this big behemoth of a federal agency, it's always advisable to at least consult with counsel with, like, you know, a 30-minute call, just to make sure that you're proceeding on firm legal ground and you're not wasting your time or the EEOC's time.
Yeah, those are really good arguments. So folks, you're listening to someone, if you're one of these people, you go, I'm not just mad, I think these guys might have broke the law. Well, this is the guy you'll want to talk to. And he is going to help in these areas. We talked about this before we came on air. His number to reach Dan Dufresne. Dan, spell your last name for people real quick, will you please?
Sure. It's very French. It's Dufresne, which is D like dog, U, F like Frank, R, E, S like Sam, N like Nancy, E. And I always say, Dave, it's like Andy Dufresne from the Shawshank Redemption, that great movie.
I hadn't thought
about
that
all the time. Yeah, I get that all the time.
Okay, here's the number, though. You can call and just ask for Dan. Yeah, his number is 858-740-8181. That's 858-740-8181. And I think you're going to be a busy guy over the next couple of months. I really do. I wanted to ask you one thing before we have to end here. In places in Texas and other places, they're sending the National Guard door to door and asking people questions about COVID-19. I wouldn't even open the door. I'm going to have you criticize me here. I would say through the door, you have no probable cause to be on my property, leave. And I'm not opening the door to you unless you have a warrant. Okay, go ahead and criticize me.
I don't think I have to, Dave. I think you're on firm legal ground to do that, because, you know, there's an old saying in Supreme Court case law, a man's house is his castle. And yes, the authorities, whether it's whatever color of law it is, if it's the National Guard or police or sheriff, you know, they have, they need to get a warrant unless they're in hot pursuit or they see a crime in action in the house.
Correct.
But yeah, I would follow exactly what you said and just say, hey, listen, guys, I appreciate your service, but, you know, don't let the door hit you in the rear end on the way out.
Yeah, I would. The bottom line is, I believe in governmental incrementalism. You let them do this much today, tomorrow they're coming into your house to take your guns. And so you need.
I mean, with that, that's been, yeah, that's what history has shown, isn't it? That's very true.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's why I've told people, do not talk to them, do not let them in. Tell them, I appreciate the job you're doing, now get off my property unless you have a warrant. And
absolutely.
Nice, don't be mean to the people. They're doing their jobs, and I don't think there's any reason to verbally abuse them. But I think there's reason to be really firm and then shut your door. And then the battering ram comes out, oh, the fun's going to start when this whole COVID thing clears. So, Dan, your practice, though, just out of curiosity, you're limited to employment issues pretty much. Is that it?
Well, I do, you know, I do a lot of different issues. I have a background in employment, and then I also have a background, interestingly enough, in security clearance law. And that's kind of been a hot issue with the Trump administration and trying to revoke John Brennan's security, whether or not, you know, Jared Kushner should have a security clearance. I never thought that area of the law would become kind of a focal point. But yeah, I do a lot of national security and security clearance work as well. And then I also help some clients, you know, small business clients, which I've got an uptick in that business right now where, you know, small business clients are trying to form a new LLC. How do they do that? What's the best tax approach and, you know, an approach to limit liability as well? So, you know, business law, that's really becoming more and more important now as we have these huge amounts of money and you know, that are being put through the stimulus bill. So I think it's advisable if you're a small business, hey, you know, incorporate so that you might have a shot at getting some of this, you know, federal money to, you know, launch your business or keep your business afloat. So, you know, I do a lot of counseling.
Yeah, I found out though, if you're successful at all in business, you ain't getting any money. I looked at that. And I just said, yeah. I mean, I think we're modest here at the Common Sense Show, and we wouldn't get any money. And it's ludicrous. I mean, it was kind of like the government's let them eat cake, $1,200. How far is that going to go? That's a whole other story for another time. But people think, oh, $1,200, and we sold our Constitution for $1,200 a piece. That's an article that I wrote recently.
I love that article, Dave. That was right on the mark. And I was joking with my bride out here. I said, you know, $1,200 in San Diego, that's a couple of tanks of gas.
Yeah.
I mean,
if you're lucky.
It's all relative. If you live in Wichita versus, you know, Phoenix or a big metropolitan area, it's not the same.
No, I paid those gas prices out there in California. Dan, we're out of time. I just want to give out your number real quick. If you got employment issues and you want Dan to help you, 858-740-8181. 858-740-8181. Dan, we're right up against the end. Thanks for joining us, and we're going to consult with you as we go through this crisis on various constitutional issues. Thanks for being with us on the Common Sense Show, and ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. If you're on one network, you'll be going right into hour number two. If you're on the other network, well, you'll be hearing this tomorrow. God bless all of you. We'll see you back here. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, Dave.